I've got a project for you, he said, wiggling the last lock free, which Lucas knew could stick a bit. I want you to add a panel on the back here, just a simple LED array. Figure out some code so we can see who's calling us. I want to know if it's important or if we can safely ignore it.
He yanked the back panel off the server and set it noisily against the front of server 40 behind him. Lucas took another sip of water while Bernard peered into the machine's dark and cavernous interior, studying the blinking lights above the little communication jacks. The black guts of the server tower and its frantic buzzing drowned out Bernard's whispered curses. He pulled his head out, which was bright red with anger, and turned to Lucas, who set his cup on his tray.
In fact, what I want right here is two lights.
Bernard pointed to the side of the tower.
A red light if it's Silo 17 calling. Green if it's anyone else. You got that?
Lucas nodded. He looked down at his tray and started cutting a potato in half, thinking suddenly of his father. Bernard turned and grabbed the server's rear panel.
I can prop that back on.
Lucas mumbled this around a hot mouthful of potatoes. He breathed out steam to keep his tongue from burning, swallowed, and chased it with water. Bernard left the panel where it was. He turned and glared angrily into the pit of the machine, which continued to buzz and buzz, the overhead lights winking in alarm.
Good idea, he said. Maybe you can knock this project out first thing.
Finally, the server quit its frantic calls, and the room fell silent, save for the clinking of Lucas's fork on his plate. This was like the moments of wry stench quiet from his youth. Soon, just like his father passing out on the kitchen floor or in the bathroom, Bernard would leave. As if on cue, his caster and boss stood, the head of IT again throwing Lucas into darkness as he blocked the overhead lights.
"Enjoy your dinner," he said. "I'll have Peter come by later for the dishes."
Lucas jabbed a row of beans with his fork.
"Seriously? I thought this was lunch."
He popped them into his mouth.
"It's after 8,
Bernard said. He adjusted his coveralls.
"Oh, and I spoke with your mother today."
Lucas set his fork down.
"Yeah?"
"I reminded her that you were doing important work for the silo, but she really wants to see you. I've talked with Sims about allowing her in here."
"Into the server room?"
"Just inside, so she can see that you're okay. I'd set it up elsewhere, but Sims thinks it's a bad idea. He's not sure how strong the allegiance is among the techs. He's still trying to ferret out any source of leaks."
Lucas scoffed.
"Sims is paranoid. None of our techs are going to side with those greasers. They're not going to betray the silo, much less you."
He picked up a bone and picked the remaining meat with his teeth.
"Still, he has me convinced to keep you as safe as possible. I'll let you know if I can set something up so you can see her."
Bernard leaned forward and squeezed Lucas's shoulder.
"Thanks for being patient. I'm glad to have someone under me who understands how important this job is."
"Oh, I understand completely," Lucas said. "Anything for the silo."
"Good."
Another squeeze of his hand, and Bernard stood.
"Keep reading the order, especially the sections on insurrections and uprisings. I want you to learn from this one just in case, God forbid, it ever happens on your watch."
"I will,"
Lucas said. He set down the clean bone and wiped his fingers on the napkin. Bernard turned to go.
"Oh."
Bernard stopped and turned back to him.
"I know you don't need me to remind you, but under no circumstances are you to answer this server."
He jabbed his finger at the front of the machine. If his hand had been a gun like Peter Billings carried, Lucas could imagine him emptying it into the thing.
"I haven't cleared you with the other IT heads yet, so your position could be in, well, grave danger, if you were to speak with any of them before the induction."
"Are you kidding?"
Lucas shook his head.
"Like, I want to talk with anyone who makes you nervous. No frickin' thanks."
Bernard smiled and wiped at his forehead.
You're a good man, Lucas. I'm glad I've got you.
And I'm glad to serve, Lucas said. He reached for another rib and smiled up at his caster while Bernard beamed down at him. Finally, the older man turned to go, his boots ringing across the steel grates and fading toward that massive door that held Lucas prisoner among the machines and all their secrets. Lucas ate and listened as Bernard's new code was keyed into the lock, a cadence of familiar but unknown beeps, a code Lucas no longer possessed.
"For your own good," Bernard had told him.
He chewed a piece of fat as the heavy door clanged shut, the red lights below his feet and down the ladderway blinking off. Lucas dropped the bone onto his plate. He pushed the potatoes aside, fighting the urge to gag at the sight of them. Setting the tray on the grating, he pulled his feet out of the ladderway and moved to the back of the open and quiet server. The headphones slid easily out of their pouch. He pulled them down over his ears, his palms brushing the 3-week growth of beard on his face. Grabbing the cord, he slotted it into the jack labeled 17. There was a series of beeps as the call was placed. He imagined the buzzing on the other side, the flashing lights. Lucas waited, unable to breathe. "Hello?" The voice sang in his earphones. Lucas smiled. "Hey," he said. He sat down, leaned back against server 40, and got more comfortable. "How's everything going over there?"
You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Wool, Omnibus Edition, Wool 1 through 5, written by Hugh Howey. Narrated by Minnie Good. 6. Silo 18. Walker waved his arms over his head as he attempted to explain his new theory for how the radio probably worked.
"So the sound, these transmissions, they're like ripples in the air, you see?"
He chased the invisible voices with his fingers. Above him, the third large antenna he'd built in 2 days hung suspended from the rafters.
"These ripples run up and down the wire, up and down."
He gesticulated the length of antenna.
"Which is why longer is better. It snags more of them out of the air."
"But if these ripples are everywhere, then why aren't we catching any?" Walker bobbed his head and wagged his finger in appreciation. It was a good question. A damn good question.
"We'll catch 'em this time," he said. "We're getting close."
He adjusted the new amplifier he'd built, one much more powerful than the tiny thing in Hank's old hip radio.
"Listen," he said.
A crackling hiss filled the room like someone twisting fistfuls of plastic sheeting. "I don't hear it."
"That's because you aren't being quiet. Listen."
There. It was faint, but a crunch of transmitted noise emerged from the hiss. "I heard it!" Walker nodded with pride, less from the thing he was building and more for his bright understudy. He glanced at the door, made sure it was still closed. He only spoke with Scotty when it was closed.
"What I don't get is why I can't make it clearer."
He scratched his chin.
"Unless it's because we're too deep in the earth."
"We've always been this deep," Scotty pointed out. "That sheriff we met years ago, he was always talking on his radio just fine." Walker scratched the stubble on his cheek. His little shadow, as usual, had a good point.
"Well, there is this one little circuit board I can't figure out. I think it's supposed to clean up the signal. Everything seems to pass through it."
Walker spun around on his stool to face the workbench, which had become dominated by all the green boards and colorful tangles of wires needed for this most singular project. He lowered his magnifier and peered at the board in question. He imagined Scotty leaning in for a closer inspection.
"What's this sticker?"
Scotty pointed to the tiny dot of a white sticker with the number 18 printed on it. Walker was the one who had taught Scotty that it's always okay to admit when you didn't know something. If you couldn't do this, you would never truly know anything.
I'm not sure,
he admitted.
But you see how this little board slotted into the radio with ribbon cables?
Scotty nodded.
It's like it was meant to be swapped out, like maybe it burns up easy. I'm thinking this is the part that's holding us up, like a blown fuse.
Well, can we bypass it?
Bypass it?
Walker wasn't sure what he meant. Go around it, in case it's burned out, short it.
We might blow something else. I mean, it wouldn't be in here if it weren't truly needed.
Walker thought for a minute. He wanted to add that the same could be said of Scotty, of the boy's calming voice. But then, he never was good at telling his shadow how he felt. Only what he knew. Well, that's what I would try. There was a knock at the door, followed by the squeal of hinges left purposefully loud. Scotty melted into the shadows beneath the workbench, his voice trailing off in the hiss of static from the speakers. Walk, what the hell's going on here? He swiveled around on his stool, the lovely voice and harsh words soldered together as only Shirley could fuse them. She came into his workshop with a covered tray, a thin-lipped frown of disappointment on her face. Walker lowered the volume on the static.
I'm trying to fix the...
No, what's this nonsense I hear about you not eating? She set the tray in front of him and pulled off the cover, releasing the steam off a plate of corn. Did you eat your breakfast this morning, or did you give it to someone else?
That's too much,
he said, looking down at 3 or 4 rations of food. Not when you've been giving yours away, it isn't. She slapped a fork into his hand. Eat. You're about to fall out of your coveralls. Walker stared at the corn. He stirred the food with his fork, but his stomach was cramped beyond hunger. He felt like he'd gone long enough that he'd never be hungry again. The cramp would just tighten and tighten into a little fist, and then he'd be just fine forever. Eat, damn it! He blew on a bite of the stuff, had no desire to consume it, but put some in his mouth to make Shirley happy. And I don't want to hear that any of my men are hanging around your door sweet-talking you, okay? You are not to give them your rations, you got that? And take another bite. Walker swallowed. He had to admit the burn of the food felt good going down. He gathered up another small bite.
I'll be sick if I eat all of this, he said.
And I'll murder you if you don't. He glanced over at her, expecting to see her smiling. But Shirley didn't smile anymore. Nobody did. What the hell is that noise? She turned and surveyed the workshop, hunting for the source of it. Walker set down his fork and adjusted the volume. The knob was soldered onto a series of resistors. The knob itself was called a potentiometer. He had a sudden impulse to explain all of this, anything to keep from eating. He could explain how he figured out the amplifier, how the potentiometer was really just an adjustable resistor, how each little twist of the dial could hone the volume to whatever he... Walker stopped. He picked up his fork and stirred his corn. He could hear Scotty whispering from the shadows. Oh, that's better, Shirley said, referring to the reduced hiss. That's a worse sound than the old generator used to make. Hell, if you can turn that down, why ever have it up so loud? Walker took a bite. While he chewed, he set his fork down and grabbed his soldering iron from its stand. He rummaged in a small parts bin for another scrap potentiometer.
Hold these,
he told Shirley around his food. He showed her the wires hanging off the potentiometer and lined them up with the sharp silver prods from his multimeter. If it means you'll keep eating. She pinched the wires and the prods together between her fingers and thumbs. Walker scooped up another bite, forgetting to blow on it. The corn burned his tongue. He swallowed without chewing, the fire melting its way through his chest. Shirley told him to slow down, to take it easy. He ignored her and twisted the knob of the potentiometer. The needle on his multimeter danced, letting him know the part was good. Why don't you take a break from this stuff and eat while I'm here to watch? Shirley slid a stool away from the workbench and plopped down on it.
Because it's too hot, he said,
waving his hand at his mouth. He grabbed a spool of solder and touched it to the tip of the hot soldering iron, coating it with bright silver.
"I need you to hold the black wire to this."
He lightly touched the iron to the tiny leg of the resistor on the board labeled 18. Shirley leaned over the bench and squinted at the one he was indicating. "And then you'll finish your dinner?"
"Swear."
She narrowed her eyes at him as if to say that she took this promise seriously, then did as he had shown her. Her hands weren't as steady as Scotty's, but he lowered his magnifier and made quick work of the connection. He showed her where the red wire went and tacked that one on as well. Even if none of this worked, he could always remove it and tinker with something else. "Well, now don't let it get cold," Shirley told him. "I know you won't eat it if it cools, and I am not going back to the mess hall to warm it up for you." Walker stared at the little board with the numbered sticker on it. He grudgingly took up the fork and scooped a sizable bite.
"How are things out there?"
he asked, blowing on the corn. "Things are shit," Shirley said. "Jenkins and Harper are arguing over whether or not they should kill the power to the entire silo, but then some of the guys who were there, you know, when Knox and..." She looked away, left the sentence unfinished. Walker nodded and chewed his food. "Some of them say the power in IT was on to the max that morning, even though we had shut it down from here."
"Maybe it was rerouted," Walker said. "Or battery backups. They have those, you know."
He took another bite, but was dying to spin the potentiometer. He was pretty sure the static had changed when he'd made the second connection. "I keep telling them it'll do us more harm than good to screw with the silo like that. It'll just turn the rest of them against us."
"Yeah. Hey, can you adjust this, you know, while I eat?"
He turned the volume up on the static, needing two hands to work the loose knob as it dangled from its bright wires. Shirley seemed to shrink from the noise crackling out of his home-built speakers. She reached for the volume knob as if to turn it down.
"No, I want you to spin the one we just installed."
"What the hell, Walk? Just eat your damn food already." He took another bite, and for all her cussing and protests, Shirley began adjusting the knob.
"Slowly,"
he said around his food. And sure enough, the static from the speakers modulated. It was as if the crunching plastic had begun to move and bounce around the room. "What am I even doing?"
"Helping an old man."
"Yeah, I might need you up here on this one."
Walker dropped his fork and held out his hand for her to stop. She had gone past it, though, into the static once more. Shirley seemed to intuit this. She bit her lip and wiggled the knob the other way around until the voices returned.
"Sounds good. It's quiet down here anyway. You need me to bring my kit?"
"You did it," Shirley whispered to Walker, as if these people could hear her if she spoke too loudly. "You fixed..." Walker held up his hand. The chatter continued.
"Negative. You can leave the kit. Deputy Roberts is already here with hers. She's sweeping for clues as I speak."
"What I'm doing is working while he does nothing,"
a faint voice called out in the background. Walker turned to Shirley while laughter rolled through the radio, more than one person enjoying the joke. It had been a long time since he'd heard anyone laugh, but he wasn't laughing. Walker felt his brows furrow in confusion. "What's wrong?" Shirley asked. "We did it! We fixed it!" She got off her stool and turned as if to run and tell Jenkins.
"Wait!"
Walker wiped his beard with his palm and jabbed his fork toward the strewn collection of radio parts. Shirley stood a pace away, looking back at him, smiling.
"Deputy Roberts?"
Walker asked.
"Who in all the levels is that?"
7. Silo 17. Juliet flicked the lights on in the suit lab as she hauled in her latest load from supply. Unlike Solo, she didn't take the constant source of power for granted. Not knowing where it came from made her nervous that it wouldn't last. So while he had the habit, the compulsion even, of turning every light on to full and leaving it there, She tried to conserve the mysterious energy as much as possible. She dropped her recent scavenges on her cot, thinking of Walker as she did so. Is this how he ended up living amongst his work? Was it the obsession, the drive, the need to keep hammering away at a series of never-ending problems until he couldn't sleep more than a few paces from them? The more she understood the old man, the farther away from him she felt, the lonelier. She sat down and rubbed her legs, her thighs and calves tight from the most recent hike up. She may have been gaining her porter legs these last weeks, but they were still sore all the time, the ache in them a constant new sensation. Squeezing the muscles transformed that ache into pain, which she somehow preferred. The sharp and definable sensations were better than the dull and nameless kind. She liked feeling things she could understand. Juliet kicked her boots off, strange to think of these scavenged things as hers, and stood up. That was enough rest. It was as much rest as she could allow herself to have. She carried her canvas sacks to one of the fancy workbenches, everything in the suit lab nicer than what she'd had in mechanical. Even the parts engineered to fail were constructed with a level of chemical and engineering sophistication she could only begin to appreciate now that she understood their evil intent. She had amassed piles of washers and seals, the good from supply and the leftover bad from the lab, to see how the system worked. They sat along the back of her main workbench, a reminder of the diabolical murderousness with which she'd been sent away. She dumped out the parts from supply and thought about how strange it was to have access to live in this forbidden heart of some other silo. It was stranger still to appreciate these workbenches, these immaculate tools, all arranged for the purpose of sending people like her to their death. Looking around at the walls, at the dozen or so cleaning suits hanging from racks in various states of repair, it was like living and working in a room full of ghostly apparitions. If one of these suits jumped down and started moving about on its own, it wouldn't surprise her. The arms and legs on each one were puffy, as if full, the mirrored visors easily concealing curious faces. It was like having company, these hanging forms. They watched her, impassively, while she sorted her finds into two piles. One of items she needed for her next big project, the other of useful tidbits she had snagged with no specific idea of what she might use them for. A valuable, rechargeable battery went in this second group, some blood still on it that she hadn't been able to wipe off. Images flashed through her mind of some of the scenes she'd found while scrounging for materials, like the two men who had committed suicide in the head office of supply. Their hands interlocked, opposite wrists slit, a rust-colored stain all around them. This was one of the worst scenes, a memory she couldn't shake. There were other evidences of violence scattered about the silo. The entire place was haunted and marred. She completely understood why Solo limited his rounds to the gardens. She also empathized with his habit of blocking off the server room every night with the filing cabinet, even though he had been alone for years. If someone hadn't long ago fried the electronic keypad that activated the locks on that door, he would probably be employing it to come and go. Juliet didn't blame him. She slid the deadbolts on the suit lab every night before she went to sleep. She didn't really believe in ghosts, but that conviction was being sorely tested by the constant feeling of being watched by, if not actual people, the silo itself. She began her work on the air compressor, and, as always, it felt good to be doing something with her hands, fixing something, staying distracted. The first few nights, after surviving the horrible ordeal of being sent to clean, of fighting her way inside this carcass of a silo, she had searched, long and hard, for some place that she could actually sleep. It was never going to be below the server room, not with the stench of Solo's debris piles pervading the place. She tried the apartments for IT's head, but thoughts of Bernard made it impossible to even sit still. The couches in various offices weren't long enough. The pad she'd tried to put together on the warm server floor was nice, but the clicking and whirring of all those tall cabinets nearly drove her insane. The suit lab, strangely enough, with the specters and ghouls hanging about, was the only spot where she'd won a decent night of sleep. It was probably the tools everywhere, the welders and wrenches, the walls of drawers full of every socket and driver imaginable. If she was going to fix anything, even herself, it was there in that room. The only other place she'd felt at home in Silo 17 was in the two jail cells she sometimes slept in on trips up and down. There, and sitting behind that empty server, talking to Lucas. She thought about him as she crossed the room to grab the right-sized tap from one of the expansive metal tool chests. She pocketed this and pulled down one of the complete cleaning suits, admiring the heft of the outfit, remembering how bulky it had felt when she'd worn one just like it. She lifted it onto a clear workbench and pulled off the helmet's locking collar, took this to the drill press, and carefully bored a starter hole. With the collar in a vise, she began working the tap into the hole, creating new threads for the air hose. She was wrestling with this and thinking about her last conversation with Lucas when the smell of fresh bread preceded Solo into the lab.
"Hello,"
he called from the doorway. Juliet looked up and jerked her chin for him to enter. Turning the tap required effort, the metal handle digging into her palms, sweat forming on her brow.
"I baked more bread."
"Smells great," she grunted.
Ever since she'd taught Solo how to bake flatbread, she couldn't get him to stop. The large tins of flour that had been holding up his canned goods shelves were being removed one at a time while he experimented with recipes. She reminded herself to teach him more things to cook, to put this industriousness of his to good use by having him mix it up a little.
"And I sliced cucumbers,"
he said, proud as if it were a feast beyond compare. In so many ways, Solo was stuck with the mind of a teenager, culinary habits included.
"I'll have some in a bit," she told him.
With effort, she finally got the tap all the way through the pilot hole, creating a threaded connection as neat as if it had come from supply. The tap backed out easily, just like a fitted bolt would. Solo placed the plate of bread and vegetables on the workbench and grabbed a stool.
"What you working on? Another pump?"
He peered at the large wheeled air compressor with the hoses trailing off it.
"No, that was going to take too long. I'm working on a way to breathe underwater."
Solo laughed. He started munching on a piece of bread until he realized she was serious.
"Oh, you're serious?"
"I am. The pumps we really need are in the sump basins at the very bottom of the silo. I just need to get some of this electricity from IT down to them. We'll have the place dry in weeks or months instead of years."
"Breathe underwater?"
he said. He looked at her like she was the one losing her mind.
"It's no different than how I got here from my silo."
She wrapped the male end of the air hose coupler with silicone tape, then began threading it into the collar. "These suits are airtight, which makes them watertight. All I need is a constant supply of air to breathe, and I can work down there as long as I like. Long enough to get the pumps going, anyway.